Doesn't look like things that would have secrets in it, does it?
Oh, it doesn't, right. But,
okay. About the sabbatical year? I mean, what's the so secret?
I know.
You can see secrets in the sabbatical year.
There's mystical stuff
in it. The seven years.
There's secrets. Okay, so today's March 4th, 2013. And we're doing Mitzvot 326 to 330. Now, we looked at this a little bit because Mitzvah number 89 is the first sabbatical mitzvah. So, but we didn't do the whole set. Okay, so what page are we at? 326?
363.
Page 363 in book 3. The prohibition against working the earth during the sabbatical year. That we should not work the soil in the seventh year, which is called the year of the Shemitah. That's the year of release. And the root purpose of this precept and its details and subject matter are written in Sedra Mishpatim, 84. So I will read that.
So too. Look it up.
Right. So fortunately for you, I brought my volume 1, so we can look it up. Okay. That's interesting stuff. Okay. So there's lots of different reasons it talks about. So we'll see what the Chinuch says, and we'll compare a few reasons. At the root of the precept lies the purpose to establish in our heart and set in our thought a firm conception of the doctrine that the world... What? I'm making you guys guess. What do you think Shemitah is about?
Created, well, I was going to say 7 days.
That was what occurred to me, but that's too obvious.
So that is one of them. Shabbat, okay. That the world... So, but here he actually says something else. So the world's created in 6 days and we rest on the seventh. Okay, we have Shabbat every week for that.
Right.
This is a little twist on that, a little... That the world is brought into being as a new entity out of nothing. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, and on the seventh day, when he created nothing, he had himself described as resting. It's interesting that he writes it that way. He had himself described as resting. Hmm. Not that he rested, right?
Right.
Then, in order to remove, uproot, and extirpate from our thinking any concept of the world's timeless pre-existence, in which those who deny the Torah believe, thereby demolishing its every basis and breaking its every wall, the obligation was imposed on us to spend our entire time day by day, year in reference to this, hence to count 6 years and rest on the seventh, and thus the matter will never, ever depart from between our eyes, from our mind, as it is akin to our practice of spending the days of the week as 6 working days and a day of rest. So here he's saying that that idea is to understand that God made the world, brought it into existence, as opposed to refraining from work. So Shabbat is sort of is about, yes, recognizing that God made the world, and therefore God runs the world, and then therefore God gets to decide what you do with your time, what belongs to whom. So there's that. But this is an addition to that, working towards Olam Haba, because Shabbat is about working towards Olam Haba. Right, Shabbat is about understanding that there is a period of work and creative effort and a period of dwelling in the fruits of that effort. And we have that cycle throughout our lives, working towards dwelling in, so that it should become ingrained in us that this world is about working towards and the next world is about dwelling in. And so that we get practice every Shabbat living in that which we created, so that we understand that the next world is only that which we created in this world. And that we need to create or we won't have. So we have that practice every week. And we do sometimes come up short. And it reminds us, oh yeah, I better prepare a little bit better next week. Right? So we have that regular practice so that we can come to that. So Shabbat's partly about that. But Shemitah has a lot of different reasons. So, but one of them is to remind us that the world is created ex nihilo.
From nothing.
The world's created from nothing. So it's interesting because at this time, and I wish I knew more history of science, so 1300s, anybody knows, I guess that at the time there was, well, so Plato and Aristotle for sure had this concept of...
So what is this book that you're reading from?
This right here is the Sefer Chinuch.
Same Sefer Chinuch, volume one. That's what we studied it, but we just don't know.
Yeah, sorry. Right, yeah, yeah. That's why it's good to do Chazara. So the earlier philosophers believed that the world was a static world and always existed. Okay. Right? And that, so we have changed in it. And that was actually, so you don't remember, except for you will remember this, the Big Bang theory, right? Before it was a television show, it was a theory. And that was actually rejected at first. So you're not old enough to remember the rejection. But initially it was rejected because it had theological import. When Einstein first came up with the fact that with, you know, all his ideas, and then because he actually recalculated some of his equations because he couldn't accept the fact that they pointed towards a world that came into being. So he did not. And so he's not credited with discovering that. That happened with some of his other equations, I think, through some radio, listening to some radio waves and hearing the concept of an expanding universe. So he did equations that made him
showed that.
That showed
that,
but he couldn't. He could not. He could not. Because the state of science at the time, the philosophy of scientists at the time, excluded a dynamic universe. It was a static universe, and it
even
had to be
set. At the point of Einstein, which was not that many years ago.
Not that many years ago. So the Big Bang was initially rejected because it meant that there was a point before something, and then something happened, and then there was an explosion and things went forward. So Big Bang really lines up nicely with the Bible, and it was highly rejected. Right.
But it does sort of line up with the Bible.
It lines up very nicely with the Bible, which is why the scientists rejected it.
Oh, I see. It was rejected from a scientific perspective.
It was rejected from a scientific perspective because they said that it can't be. Because we understand and we believe in something from nothing. God, there was nothing except God. And then there was something that God made. And so there was a point in time where there was an explosion and then there was something.
That hadn't been there.
Right? That's the biblical perspective. And so science recently came to that understanding, but very recently, just in the last century, right? And so that was a real problem. So that's what he's reflecting here.
Okay.
He's writing in the time of static universe philosophy. So he's saying, and so that's why it's so interesting, he uses all these words in order to uproot, remove, and extirpate. It's not enough to have one, right? Remove, uproot, and extirpate the notion from our head that it's possible that it could be always there. No, that's what, one reason why we keep Shemitah is to understand that God made
the world from nothing.
Made the world from nothing, right? So we should know that. Okay, so that's what he says. Okay, the Sefer HaChinuch says that. Now, let's look and see what this book says. Okay, so this book by Abraham Chiller, I brought it in a few times before. So I'll just for you to know how to look things up if you ever want to. This is a nice book, all 613 mitzvot. What's helpful for me is the notes in the end of each mitzvah. So I, for instance, knew that we had looked at Shemitah before. I wasn't quite sure where it was, right? So, and I wanted to find it right away.
He cross-references it.
He cross-references. So he'll say, you know, where it is. So he lists all the verses. So I just had to look up the first thing, sabbatical year. So the first reference is Exodus 23:11, and then what we're doing, Leviticus 25:2, Leviticus 25:4, and Leviticus 25:5 are our verses, but he puts them all together. And then he has different commentaries, and then he gives references here. So even in here, in his references at the end, he would say, which I didn't even look up yet, but he would say which mitzvot it is in the Sefer HaChinuch. Let's see here. Anyway, so, Sefer Mitzvot, let us say Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, Sefer Chinuch Mitzvot 84, 112, 326, 327, 328.
So it tells you all the places
right.
It's mentioned.
Right, so you can find it. This is very nice for finding
it's
things across
nice.
References because it'll tell you where it is in
sure.
the Rambam, in the
great.
Mishnah.
Yeah.
Right, so this is a really handy book.
So that's a super good reference book, right?
Really handy book. Right, so now let's hear what the commentators say. Right, so Ibn Ezra says that the seven-year agricultural cycle parallels the divine plan of creation. God completed his work of creation in 6 days, and each day comprised a cycle of morning and evening, light and darkness. On the seventh day he rested, so too the Jew is asked to work his soil. Each year parallels one day of creation, and the seasons of spring, summer, fall, and winter parallel the day's morning and evening hours. The seventh year is equivalent to the seventh day of creation. Accordingly, the Jew must not work his fields during that year. Okay. Nachmanides cites the Ibn Ezra, which we're going to look at in a minute, adding that since the seven-year agricultural cycle parallels the 7 days of creation, anyone who violates the sabbatical year thereby actually denies the existence and omniscience of God, omnipotence of God. Now, it's interesting because you'd think that if that was the case...
They apply everywhere.
Oh, you'd think that if that was the case, then the punishment should just be bad crops or something like that. But the punishment for violating Shemitah is actually exile. So it's a stronger punishment.
But I would think it would also mean that it would apply everywhere.
apply everywhere across the world.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, you would think that, right? Yeah,
if it were that.
It's just about Shabbos, it should apply everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Why just in the land?
Right, yeah.
So there's got to be something about the land.
Yeah.
And, okay, that's good, excellent, because, and that also, so the punishment is exile. From the land, which means
then you don't have to do it.
Yeah. Right, so which means there's something going on with the land, and what does that mean, the land of Israel? So we have to get there. Right, now, the Kli Yakar rejects Maimonides' explanation, which is interesting because we know that the Sefer Chinuch goes by Maimonides, right? That's his master, his teacher, that's the one he goes by every time he says, my teacher, he's talking about Maimonides. His count reflects the count of Maimonides, but he does not bring Maimonides' reason, which is that it's good for the land, right? To let the land lie fallow.
Which is absolutely true.
It's true.
It is true, but there's a lot of things we do that.
That is true, right? But that's what the Maimonides is saying, is that it's good for the land, and that's one, I mean, maybe that's not the reason, but that's one reason why we do it, and that's not quoted anywhere else. So just the fact that it's scientifically healthy for the land, that's, you know, physically healthy, that's not brought. And the Kli Yakar actually rejects that. So, but the Kli Yakar says, he also rejects the thesis that the seven-year agricultural cycle is meant to recall the 7 days of creation, because we already have the weekly Sabbath for this purpose. So, right, so now we see that the Kli Yakar is rejecting the theory that is not the theory that the Sefer Chinuch brought. The Sefer Chinuch said it's not about the 6 days of creation, but rather it's created ex nihilo.
Right.
So it's not about Sabbath. It's not paralleling. So there is such a concept that parallels the weekday Sabbath cycle, but the Sefer Chinuch is not bringing that, and the Kli Yakar is now rejecting that.
Now, does he hold the same status as Rambam?
The Kli Yakar?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
But, I mean, I don't know all their statuses yet.
I was just curious.
Right. The author concludes that the purpose of the law is to teach us not to regard man as absolute lord over the yield of the soil. Also, it is to teach us to trust that God will provide us with adequate crops during the sixth year, so that we'll be able to subsist on them also during the seventh year, when we do not till our soil. In other words, the laws of Shemitah are intended as an exercise in faith and self-discipline.
Mm.
Right, so
that's a good one.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's an additional thing. Faith and self-discipline. Now, did you find good stuff in the Rambam?
I'm listening to you and I'm trying to read this. Yeah.
Right. Okay, I'll let you read it one more, and I'll read one more thing.
Faith and what?
Self-discipline, right.
Control was all I could think of.
Right. So I'll read you the Barbanel. Also, during the six-day week of work, man is constantly under stress and in a state of fatigue. When the Sabbath arrives, he declares that he's had enough of the chase after material gains. On this seventh day, he's resolved to rest his weary body and devote himself to the development of his moral and religious potential. This is also the purpose of the Shemitah year and the Jubilee year in the human lifespan. During his productive years, adolescence, and maturity, man must work diligently for his livelihood if he is to survive. But there comes a time, when he must think in terms of loftier ideals, and when he must cease pursuing material gain and earthly pleasures, and must turn to the fulfillment of his innate yearning for sanctity and godliness. So this is a separate reason, right?
So
Shabbos,
idea of making space then, sort of.
Yeah, well, making space, but for what?
Well, for...
If you're a farmer, if you're a laborer, if you're whatever, if you're dependent on an agricultural society, you know, if your society's agriculturally based. So everybody's working the land and dealing with that. This is a year off for everybody to go learn. This is where we get sabbatical years for professors, is from here, right? That they put out, and then they should take a year of taking in.
To sort of recharge.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we have Shabbos during the week to rest our bodies, and hopefully if our bodies aren't so overworked, we should be able to use some of the Shabbos time to grow spiritually as well. But this is a whole year, so you for sure will get to the point of rest. You know, I mean, I think when you ask a young mom, you're like, what do you want for vacation? She just wants to sleep, right? So ask her after you sleep, then what do you want? Like once you're restored, then what are you interested in, right? So, because sometimes you just can't see past the sleep. Right? So Shabbos afternoon, you sometimes can't see that either.
Right.
Some people just use Shabbos to sleep. But let's say you are slept, right? Then what would you use it for? So Shemitah year, you will get the physical rest that you need, and then you have a chance to actually learn, because other concerns are taken away.
So in that sense, it is analogous again, but at a slightly different level to Shabbos. I mean,
yeah, just there's just, something I mean, about it, but it's
similar,
is a different
but it's at a different level, right, so a much deeper level.
Right, so the idea here, so the Abarbanel is saying, rather than us, rather than the discipline and the emuna, right, from not working the land and trusting God to provide us anyway, or maybe in addition to that layer, is the concept that we actually need to invest in ourselves, and so we have to have time to do that.
Right.
So we create that time by not working the ground during that year so that we have time to actually
again,
grow spiritually. So it's about us, not about the land.
And then again...
Right.
Okay, yeah, so I found
okay, good. Okay, now the Nachmanides, Ramban.
Okay, actually, this is not Nachmanides. This is Rabbi Abraham Ibn Ezra being quoted as the concept of, he says, the meaning of a Sabbath unto the eternal, mm-hmm. capital E, is like that of the Sabbath day. And what he goes on to say is that not only if you do not obey the Sabbath, but you do not obey the Shemitah, mm-hmm. the 7 years, that you really will not have a place in the world to come.
Uh-huh. Right.
So
right.
That's sort of like yeah. the punishment, though.
The punishment
failing.
Is exile. But the punishment
well,
here
the
is...
The consequence.
The consequence right. really is consequence. No share, no life in the world to come.
That you didn't build it.
But
that's
again, all of those things... lead me to say why only
Shabbos,
in the land?
Shabbos. Right. Why,
well, why
in the
only
land?
In the land? I mean, all,
right.
all
that's a very good
every,
question.
Everything that we've said.
Right. I agree. 100%.
Leads
why
me
only
to
in
say
the
if it's about the person, if it's about spiritual,
it should be
growth,
everywhere.
If it's about
right,
charging, recharging, if it's about
to,
if it's yes. about recognize. I mean, if any of the things that we've said, it is anything.
Right.
I mean, we don't
right.
just do Shabbos
so,
in the land.
Right. No, but we belong in the land. That's the truth.
We're supposed to be in the land.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the land is really holy and sanctified.
It is.
And it's more, it's weightier over there than it is yeah. here.
Much
that
everything.
I understand.
It's true.
That I understand.
So there's more access there.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's
more
access,
but there's more punishment.
So
yeah, for sure.
Question. For example, Rashi, he was a winter, right? He had vineyards.
Yes.
Do you think he
He was
deserved?
In France. He
right.
was in France.
Right.
So he didn't have to. Outside of the land of Israel.
And he wouldn't, you think?
No. Outside of the land of Israel, you do not have to observe it. No. No, so they do not. And in fact, one of the things that we learn today, because we do have Jews living in Israel, farming the land, one of the things that has to be figured out very carefully is what is the exact boundary of the land of Israel and not? Because the state of Israel is not the same as the land of Israel. It occupies part of the land of Israel, but there are some parts of this that the state occupies that's not the land, and some parts of the land certainly that the state doesn't occupy. So if you get dates from Jordan, right, on the Shemitah year, are they Shemitah dates or not? What do you do with them? And there's all kinds of things you have to learn about how to deal with the different produce and where it comes from. So, yeah, so, no, it's you don't have to do it outside the land, but you do have to know what's the boundaries of the land. And it is very tricky. And then, of course, you have the whole fake awry that the Arabs do where the some non-religious Jews or some people who would rather make money than keep the Torah sell their produce to Arabs who say it's Arab produce and then sell it back mm-hmm. to the Jews. And the Arabs make a lot of money during Shemitah year selling food to the Jews. Not just that way. I mean, bringing it from other places, too. But, yeah, it's a big boon for the Arabs. They look forward to it.
You know, I think maybe a lot of this can also, I've got a lot of thoughts on it, tied to the emphasizing the specialness of the land and emphasizing that that is where it's the city on the hill.
Yeah.
That we should be living as... Not that everybody should be a Jew, but that we are an example of how to relate to Hashem. And anybody can take it on that chooses to dedicate themselves mm-hmm. to that. But I think being a light to the world, is if you're not special, you're not going to light anything because you're just going to fall into the same shadows as
right.
what exists.
Right. Okay, so that brings us to Rav Hirsch.
Okay.
Who I may have mentioned before. Okay. So.
And if somebody told me this Shabbos, I said, well, and I also used, we're talking about the translation on the Torah and exact words, can you go by the exact meaning of the words and so forth. And I said, well, I really, into. Oh, yeah, but that's more esoteric. And I said, so? Right. It was a rabbi. Mm-hmm. And I said, so?
Yeah.
I said, that's all part of the game.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll just read you one paragraph from his, but it's interesting to see. The Sabbath year is the greatest act on the part of a whole nation of recognition that God is the sole, one and real owner and master of their country. Inasmuch as in that year they lay it in homage at his feet and refrain from exercising their rights of ownership on their lands. But by this they acknowledge themselves as gerim v'toshavim, as aliens and dwellers, only by the tolerance of the owner in their land. This feeling does away with the arrogance, which, priding itself on standing on its own soil, tends to become unsympathetic and harsh in dealing with the poor and landless ones. Moreover, it engenders that frame of mind which lovingly includes the stranger, the poor, and also the animals as creatures of God, who have the right to live in the land which belongs to God, which all are to share in common. That's nice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's
nice.
A different perspective.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Totally,
yeah.
And it is a different perspective.
Yeah.
And that does tie into the land.
Mm-hmm. It definitely ties it into the land. Now, this Shabbat, last Shabbat, I taught a class at Dot, the Shawl class, in Az Yashir. So, there's an interesting, Az Yashir is very interesting. This, the Song of the Sea that's at the end of Psukei DeZimra, has an interesting structure in the way it's written in the Torah. So the whole Torah is written in columns, but Az Yashir is written like brick-like, patch like that.
Oh, yeah, I've seen
it. Right, you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to look like the split sea and the Jews walking through the middle, right?
Oh.
So now if you will look at the very end of it, you'll see the very last verse of it. It says, just the way the verses are arranged, Hayam and Hayam, the sea and the sea, and in the middle, and the Jews walked through on the dry land. Okay, so what's the story with the dry land and the Jews walking through the dry land of the sea? That's a whole mystical thing, too. I just learned about it.
You mean it's not, like, marshy?
It's not marshy.
It's not
It's dry.
It's dry.
Right.
And
but,
how would it be dry anyway?
Right, how would it be dry, first of all? And second of all, I mean, the whole splitting of the sea, anybody who wants to say, and Rehersh discusses it too, anybody who wants to say that maybe that was just a freak of nature, that the sea split, but the fact is the sea split for the Jews, and they walked through on dry land, and immediately closed behind them on the Egyptians. So it was both things happening at once, so it couldn't just be that it opened up and the Jews walked through. You know, and so it was dry, and it was closing, and it was, you know, this whole thing happening. So what's going on with this? So it's an interesting thing. I'm trying to remember who said this. Either it was Esther Wien in a shiur that I listened to of her or of Hirsch. Anyway, one of them said, the Jew has no space on this planet. There's no place for the Jew. Every country chases them out. No nation wants to tolerate them. There's no place for them to be, except for that little space of dry land that Hashem made for them in between the walls of the ocean. It was the only place that were safe.
Mm-hmm.
So when I said that, right, when I said that in the at Dot, so it's a very Zionistic school with very learned women, so somebody said, what about the land of Israel?
Well, okay. To me, that's an analogy. When you said that, that's exactly
right?
What popped into my head, a little
okay.
piece of dry land in between.
Right, okay, it is, except for it's not safe. It has never been a safe place for the Jew.
That's true.
You know, it's not safe now, and it's not safe then.
Never was.
And anybody who bought the fake argument, which is not the Jewish one, but made by some Jews and certainly made by politicians, that we need the land of Israel because the Jews have been chased from place to place, and post-Holocaust we deserve a resting spot. No, we have not rested in that land since we got it. Not for a minute.
We send our sweet 19-year-olds off to...
That's right. That's right. So we have not rested there. It is not a rest for us. It is not a safe haven. It's not. And nobody should think it is. That's a fake line. And it's not. That's not the case. And that's what this is saying, too. The land, and Rav Hirsch says, the land is not for you, right? The land is for Hashem, and the Jews are a tool in the land. So it's Jew and land and Torah together
that
create a dwelling place for God's light to shine into the world. But it's not about safety for the Jews. That's not what it is. Jews don't have a safe spot on this planet. That's not our job. It's not our fate to be safe on the planet. Our job is to be a light in the planet. But not to have a safe spot where we could just be like every other nation. I was thinking about last night at the Dot dinner when we sang, you know, Hatikva, Liotam Chofshi Baratzenu, right? To be a free people in our land. It's not exactly what it's about.
You know, this is Rebbetzin. Beautiful, older husband's deceased.
Young Rice?
Young Rice.
That's so interesting that you knew that. She said there's no mention of Hashem's name in Hatikva either.
No, there's not.
It's right. Not even.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a.
It's a Zionistic song.
It is lovely.
The sentiment is lovely.
That's your point.
Yeah. Right. That's my point.
There's no Torah in there, and look where we are. Yeah. We're there.
Right. No, the Zionist dreams, and that's why religious Jews were anti-Zionists. I mean, so Dad is religious Zionist. So the religious Zionist took an anti-Jewish, anti-religious strain of philosophy and made it Torah, like put Torah in it. But we are pro-Yishuv Haaretz, living in the land, but Zionism is its own political philosophy. It's not necessarily Torah-based, but, you know, so there's lots of mix-up in it. For sure we should be living in the land. For sure the land is where we do mitzvahs. It's not about being our own nation. It's not about releasing us from the confines of other nations and their anti-Semitism by giving us our own spot on earth so we have a resting place. That is not it at all. But and that's why it's interesting to see here that we need to keep in mind that it's not our land even.
Right.
Even though Hashem gave it to us. We're there just as sojourners. It's God's land. And every 7 years we have to step back and say,
okay, it's yours.
Right? It's yours. It's not actually mine. I don't own it. I don't possess it. I don't get to say who gets to eat from it and who doesn't, who gets to sleep on it and who doesn't, you know. I'm just here shepherding it, and this is my time to pull back just to remind me so that I shouldn't become an arrogant landowner. So even though it was divided up amongst the tribes and every tribe had their area, but nobody should think that it actually belongs to them.
Hashem is our makom.
Right. We live in Hashem. Exactly. Right. And Hashem is supposed to live in us.
Yes, right.
And that's why it says in the beginning of Shirat Hayam, Zekeli ve'anvehu, this is my God. And so how do we translate ve'anvehu? This is my God and I'll glorify him. It's often translated, but that's not it at all. It's anvehu, has the word neve in it. Neve is a dwelling place or a resting place. This is my God. Once I claim him as my God, then I'm saying I am subjugated to his rule, his power, and therefore I will make a resting place for him and me. Just as he made a space inside him for me to live, I'll make a space inside me for him to live. And that's the relationship. That's why we say Shirat Hayam, right, at that point in davening, is to get us ready for the Shema. Shema being an interesting kind of tefillah, because it's not actually a prayer, right? We think of it as prayer. It's called a prayer, but it doesn't have praise, request, or thanks in it. You know, like, what is that exactly, right? But if you don't have, that's the one prayer that if you don't have kavana, if you don't have intent while you say it, you did not fulfill your obligation. Whereas the rest of prayer, which is actual prayer with praise, request, and thanks, if you lose kavana, certainly if you don't know the meaning of the words, but you at least have intent that you're saying it to pray, that's enough, right? But with Shema, if you don't know that you are accepting the yoke of the kingdom of heaven upon yourself at the time that you're saying it, it doesn't matter that you said it. It doesn't do anything for you.
I wonder why there's another reason that I think that the third temple will have its importance, because I think if we do what we should do with having our resting place in Hashem and Hashem in us, a building cannot hold that depth of spirituality.
It is never meant to.
Right. So that's why I'm wondering, where will this big importance of the third temple come in?
No, the building is more like an engagement ring.
Okay.
Just like the engagement ring can't hold all the love letters, and it can't hold all the bouquets of flowers, and it can't hold all the walks in the summer rain.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing, right?
Tell us more.
Yeah. Right? It can't hold that, but it symbolizes that.
Okay.
Right? So that's what the Beit HaMikdash is also. It just symbolizes
maybe
it.
It's
a little bit more than that.
It's to show, it's to be a place, it's symbolic,
right?
Yeah.
You know, no girl wants to get, you know, a plastic engagement ring, even if you'll say that's just as symbolic as the diamond and the gold. Most girls prefer a diamond. and gold or platinum.
There you go.
Right? Not everyone. Some people like something else.
What he was going to do originally. So I'm just thinking that, you know, what he wanted was to have a relationship with us.
Right.
Without a building or without sacrifice, without so many things. Without.
I don't think without. No, because he made us physical.
Sacrifices were always the part of it.
He made us physical, so he gave us physical pathways.
Yes, there are physical pathways.
So that they're all about physical pathways and how to serve him. And so it does work with us. And
yeah, I know it's going to be because the Nevi'im, you know, talk about what's going to go on in the third temple.
So we don't actually know what's going to go on. There's lots of different theories, but we're not going to know until we know. I mean, there's all kinds of machalukats. Will we have animal sacrifice? Well, it seems that there will be offerings.
Offerings, right.
So there will be physical things like that, but will they be animals? Will they just be flour? Will they be oil? We don't know what it's going to be yet, and there's all kinds of arguments about it.
Right.
So we'll see. I mean,
it says that our priests again will teach what is clean and unclean.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So we'll have Tuma and Tara.
That doesn't exist.
Right. Well, Tuma and Tara is different than offerings.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, we're going to have, it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Hopefully it'll be soon. Okay, so, all right, so we went through a bunch of different things. Did you find something else in the Ramban to share with us?
No, not really. It's kind of talking about the same thing. It's a little bit more nuts and bolts, you know.
Mm-hmm. He said something about a secret.
Well, he does talk, again.
But I didn't get the secret that was in it.
He talks about the gate, the 50 gates.
That's right. Yeah.
Which is Kabbalistic.
Right.
And let me just find it again.
Two.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I was reading it. That was about the only thing that I could find that was sort of otherworldly.
Sort of secret-y.
Yeah. Well, he does talk about secrets, and he says that really the secrets are known by those that study Kabbalah. And they're not allowed to say it.
But he does reveal something. What is he saying there? He said something. Let's see what he said in here. But I mean, again, it's a Hamavin Yavin kind of thing, which is the way that you teach Kabbalah. So Hamavin Yavin means the one who understands will understand.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to get different levels of understanding to be able to understand what he's saying, right? But he
probably beyond my understanding, anyway.
Right, because that's what he says, right? V'hine b'chan aru otanu b'sod gadol misodot ha-Torah kvar ramaz lanu. They woke us up with a big secret that's in there, and they already hinted to us that they said the ta'am Shabbat, the flavor of Shabbat, Lashem, kiyom ha-Shabbat, v'sod yemoto olam ramuz b'makom hazeh, and the secrets of the foundation of the world is hinted to in this place. V'chof oznacha, and bend your ear, lishmua masha ani rashai lihishamech, to hear what I'm permitted to cause you to hear me, menu b'lashon asher ashmiacha, in the language that I'm going to make heard to you, im tiske titbonen, if you will merit, meditate on this. But I didn't get what it is, so I don't merit. Krakatavti, right? Krakatavti, Beseda Breshit. I already wrote in Seda Breshit, so I probably have to look that up. Kisheshetime Breshit Hem Yemota Olam. That the 6 days of creation are the days of the world. V'yom Hashvi Shabbat Hashem Alacha. Right, and the seventh day is Shabbat to Hashem, your God. Kivo Yeh Shabbat L'Shem Gadol. Right, so we're just going to have to learn more. That's all. I mean, I don't understand all this. Right? There's all kinds of stuff about the future that's coming and the menucha that's going to be there. And so we did talk about some of the ideas of Shabbat and Olam Haba, and that we're working towards Olam Haba, and that's dwelling in. And also the release, releasing control over our lives, releasing control over the land, releasing ownership, right, over the earth, and recognizing that we are here by the grace of God and by nothing else, right? That it's not about us, right? I mean, it's about how we create ourselves as vessels, but still, there's all kinds of, you know, deeper stuff in there that we just have to keep learning and learning and learning so we can start understanding more.
Well, here's something which is, you know, he says, by way of the truth, the mystic teachings of the Kabbalah, when it is mine, it is yours. So when the land is really, I'm the makom, then it's finally.
Okay, that's good.
But the question I do have is why, if we're supposed to have Hashem in us all the time, everywhere, supposedly doing all these things, why do we need the land?
Right, because there is something special about the land. Okay, so why do we need the land? First of all, let's go. Just go back to when it's mine, it's yours, right?
Yeah.
So only when we can make it actually Hashem's, and right now we haven't. Just look at the land of Israel, and everybody owns their little piece and thinks they're in charge of it. So it for sure is divided and belongs to each individual. It is not Hashem's, mm-hmm. and therefore it's not ours. We're still in danger. We still have a threat every single day if it's going to be ours or not. So it's for sure not ours, so we're not rested in it. If we would make it Hashem's, then we could rest in that space, but it's not. So that's number one. So number two is, what do we need the land for? Right? What's the purpose of that? Mm-hmm. That's also Hirschian. I didn't see it in the exact space in Hirsch, but I saw this in the book Master Plan by Aryeh Carmel, which is a translation and a simplification of Hirsch's book Chorev, which is written, it's a forest book, not a trees book. It has little glimpses at trees, but it's a forest, what is Judaism about book. So in that it says, what do we need the land for, right? So if we understand that the land is, that we're supposed to be a model people and therefore create a model community, and not just, we are supposed to be a nation of priests and a holy nation, right? Mamlechet Kohanim v'Goy Kadosh, each one of us should be a priest. Nevertheless, we're not supposed to all be serving in a religious institution. The way that the Judaism works is that every day is supposed to be holy in the everyday. And so we should be priests in the everyday, whether we're garbage men, or lawyers, or mothers, or both, or or decorators, or whatever it is that we're doing, every single, or information technology people, like every single aspect should be in service of Hashem. An entire nation being a model people with every aspect of nationhood covered in the service of Hashem. So for that, we need to have a space to do that where we have a Jewish government too, because our governors, our president, our legislative body, all of that should be in the name of Hashem. So you can't do that in France, right? You have to do that in a Jewish land, because it has to be run by Jews. So it has to be a model society in a land. So that's the land that we were told to have our model society in. And if you look at where it's positioned at the crux of three continents with an ocean, so it's meant that everybody should pass through it.
And they always have.
I mean, and they always have.
Crossroads.
Right. Should be the crossroads of the world, so that the ideas that we are spreading will get, we are living will be spread. Right, that everybody who comes through us will be like the bumblebees,
quite
right?
Turn out.
Not yet,
right?
But it's gonna. But it is, though. It still is. I mean, the world is. This last pope that just stepped down, he had a great quote that they quoted. I think, where was that? For sure, I saw it. I think I saw it in Time magazine. He got in trouble for quoting this 14th century Christian scholar, who said, "Show me anything good in Islam, and I will show you, it will be from Christianity or Judaism.
Right,
and show me where it diverges from Christianity and Judaism, and there you will find only evil." Right. So the quote, quoted that, right? So, but the point is that our religion has, our ideas have been spread by others. And Rambam says that's the purpose of Christians and Muslims is to spread monotheism to the planet, which they have by good and bad means.
More successfully than Judaism.
Way more successful. So we don't need to spread Judaism to the planet. We want to spread Jewish ideas, right? Ethical monotheism needs to be spread to the planet. You know, that there is one God, that we're all created in the image of God. And I just learned something else. Yes, I forgot what that was. So we're created, when it says B'Tselem Elohim, created in the image of God, it's not Tselem Hashem. It's not Tselem Shaddai. It's not Tselem other names of God. It's Tselem Elohim, right, in that. Which, first of all, can look like it's many different powers, right? And second of all, it has about justice, and that maybe we think we can mete out justice. We think like a God we can mete out justice, because the Elohim is the justice name of Hashem. We might be in judgment too much, but we do need to. We have to figure that out. Anyway, so it's interesting just to think about. But the idea of ethical monotheism is that we're all created in the image of God. We all have inherent human dignity. We all can contribute. It's not based on our bodies, but based on our souls, right? And that our bodies are just a vehicle for that, and that the whole world should work to empower everyone to accomplish what they can accomplish. That's what we're trying to spread. It's not Judaism. We don't need people to keep 613 mitzvot. Right, but we do need people to have a fair legal system in which everyone's protected and empowered. And that's what we're trying to spread to the planet. The concept of
that.
A lot more work to do
on that. A lot more work
to do. For sure.
You know, can I just go back to the idea of the place again? If it was that, if we're going to be a light into the nations and we didn't have a place, the world wouldn't even be able to understand us at all.
Right, right.
Just for the sake of what is that, those people.
Right, no, you wouldn't.
Call us gypsies.
Right.
Would, you know, and so the place gives us the place that we practice everything to demonstrate.
Okay? Right, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. That you do have to have a spot.
From that place also when you need to be renewed and rejuvenated.
Well, so that's going esoteric, which is fine, but the actual physical need for a spot on the earth is not to give the Jew refuge, but to give the Jew a tool. It's about a tool to accomplish the Jewish mission, which is behaving as a nation, a model people in a place. And you can't be a model people. You could be a model person.
But you can't be a
model people
without a place.
Without a place,
And also the place for God to dwell on this earth, the temple, because otherwise where would the temple stand?
Right. So do we need that temple? Right. So God is for sure everywhere. Right? We say that's Beferish, a song. We learned that clearly from a song, Uncle Moishi. Right? Hashem is here, Hashem is there. Hashem is truly everywhere.
But the place of worship where you...
So, but why do we need a place of worship is a question. Do we need that actually? So it's obviously we do since Hashem made it for us. But that's more esoteric than I know about yet, so it's something just to learn more about. Why do we need a central spot and a central place? It's an interesting thing, yeah?
Because I think that everything that we do on this earth is so that we understand our relationship with God.
Yep, you're right about that.
Okay. God created us.
Right.
We are His place.
Right.
And so He, through us, not that He needs us, but we give back to Him. So we have to have a place, even if it's not the only place. We have to have something to understand, to have some sort of context for the emotion, the relationship, just like He has through us. Not that He needs it.
Yes,
but we do have synagogues and.
Well, synagogues are only a result of not having a temple.
Yeah.
Right.
So we don't need. It's not the same. Right. No, synagogues are a mikdash ma'at.
Sure.
Right.
That's what I mean. So we need the place, but we need the place
together.
And maybe it's just like a couple needs a home. A couple needs their safe space, right? You know, so you have a home, and inside the home, you have the couple's bedroom. That's their special space. Mm-hmm. Right, so I mean the temple is our home is compared to a temple, our bedrooms are compared to the Kadosh Kadoshim, right, the Holy of Holies, that inner sanctum of relationship space. So maybe it is about that we need a place to, a way to understand the significance of the relationship, and it radiates from there. I'm just saying, I think I can see that. I'm just saying, I think there's a deeper Kabbalistic thing there too that I don't yet have access to. I think there's more than the basics. We are human beings, and we need to be able to focus our energy somewhere. So we need to be able to have the world be organized and understand it through that level of organization. I think there's more than that.
Right. It's not exactly even up to us that we want and we need. It was the idea in the beginning that Hashem meant to have a place for Himself on Earth.
I don't think so, no, because Hashem doesn't need the Earth at all. No, it's all about us.
The idea of building and holding the...
it's all about us. Yeah. That's for us. Hashem doesn't need a space. He doesn't need the ark. He doesn't need the temple. He doesn't need anything to make Himself manifest. He doesn't need it. And that's all about us engaging in a process in the physical world to create space for Him in our lives. It doesn't have to do with what Hashem needs.
Right, but it was was it a commandment?
It is a commandment, yes. Yes,
right,
it is a commandment.
Because we need it.
So
it's for us, it's not from Him. But it's for us, it's not for Him. Meaning He doesn't need it. He's not sanctified any more. He's not glorified any more by having a special space.
But you don't think the land of Israel was given, promised to Jews because that was the place where they would build?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do think that, but I'm just saying it's not because Hashem needed a spot.
Right. But, you know, we were talking about why do Jews need the land.
Well, we need the land.
Not Hashem.
Right. We need. Well, so in a way Hashem does, so then we can go back to the bigger thing. So what is? Why did Hashem create the whole world? For the sake of bestowing himself to another. So he had to create a creature that would be able to receive that. In order to receive that, he had to create a creature that was in his image so they'd be like enough that there could be the possibility of relationship, and then give us mitzvot so that that creature could use their free will to enter into that relationship through doing those physical things. So in order for Hashem to do what he wants, if you could use that language about Hashem, that he desires something, in order for Hashem to be able to give good to another, they have to actually want it from him.
Right.
So that he created a whole world for that to happen, and that's why we Jews are here, set aside. The whole world is supposed to be Jewish. All people were supposed to be in that state, of in that relationship. But humanity as a group didn't
do so well.
Didn't do so well. So the Jews were set apart as a leadership nation to try to teach everybody how to be in that relationship. We're still figuring it out ourselves, right? Throughout all these millennia.
To be a teacher when you're still working on the course.
Right.
and the land of Israel, the way it is now, it's not ideal, and it will never be until
the
temple will stand, I think.
Right, and yeah, you're right.
It's not fulfilling its purpose now.
Right. No, it's not. That's correct. It is not fulfilling its purpose now.
For whatever reason.
Right. I mean, it may be starting to fulfill its purpose. You know, it's interesting, with Pesach coming, so we can already, all of us already feel Pesach, right? It's already here. It spills backwards. The Yontif spills backwards into our lives. It spills backwards halachically, the day of the Seder. Before a Yontif starts, you already can't eat chametz from a certain time. So it halachically spills backwards, but certainly the feeling of it spills way backwards, where we're all already starting to think, oh my gosh, right? So in that sense, too, the geula is spilling backwards. The ultimate redemption is spilling backwards. And the land is already taking on some stuff. So, yes, it's not fulfilling its purpose, but it is already, because it is the magnet land of the Jews.
For sure.
And the Jews are being drawn from all over the world as part of the preparation for the geula, hopefully. That's what we see, right? That's what it seems like it is right now, that the geula is spilling backwards and we are caught up in the tide. Just like right now, we're thinking about Pesach. Right now, we're thinking about the geula because it's happening. There are pieces happening. The Torah learning that's going on and some of the arguments that are going on about things and the Jews coming back to the land that's going on and just, you know, all those things are about the geula spilling backwards and the preparation happening. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to our text because there's also something interesting here based just on what. Miriam just said. Oh my goodness. The clock moves so fast.
This one is not moving.
That's not moving at all. Right, okay. So we're just going to buzz through some of these, but there's something I want to point out. Okay, the prohibition of doing work on trees during the sabbatical year. So just like you can't work your fields, you can't work your trees, right? If you have apple trees, you can't go pruning them, you can't go fixing them, you can't go, you know, whatever you need to do. Same with the vineyards. Does that say that one here? No,
it says,
but you can't.
Nor shall you prune your vineyard.
Right. 3:28, the prohibition against harvesting what grows wild in the sabbatical year. So if that's interesting, because he says, first of all, you can harvest, but not the same way. So if you use let's say wheat is growing wild, right? You can't use a scythe to harvest it with. You could cut it with scissors. You can't have big sheaves in the fields either. If you find a lot of it, you can just take what you need for the day and thresh it yourself and winnow it yourself, not use your animals for it, just for what you need to eat. So it has to be different. You can take it, but it has to be different. One reason for that, it says, on page 367 in the bottom of the first paragraph, however, the sages ruled it forbidden to eat what grows spontaneously on account of sinners and transgressors who would sow their fields in autumn and then say it's spontaneous growth. I don't know how it got here. It just got here. Yeah, this decree, though, applies only to vegetables, grains, and legumes, which is customary for people to plant. But the fruit of trees and herbs, which people do not usually plant, so that's perennials.
So, for example, just allowed some of your fruit to rot on the vine, like tomatoes, and then they fell, the fruit fell into the ground and it sprouted the next year, that you couldn't eat.
Right, that's what it's saying, is that you cannot gather, because if you do allow it to rot on the vine, you're planting it. You know, you are. Because you want to eat that tomato. You know it's only good if you pluck it at the time. You're letting it rot, and you're thinking, oh, next year, this is about, I would like some fresh tomatoes next year. You know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to plant it, but I'll just let it rot there and hope
the the seeds might drop, and they might sprout, and they might grow.
Right. So, no, that's why you can't.
Mm-hmm. Right. How about the fruit, then, that goes into the acceptable year that all of that was going on?
Oh, there's all laws about that.
There are.
It actually starts 30 days before the Shemitah year begins, and then it lasts through the year into the next year. The effects are all the next year. You have to think about dried fruits and wine and all that stuff. It's a whole big deal. So that's why you would just look on your... If you buy anything Israeli, you need to know when's the actual Shemitah year so that you don't buy Jaffa oranges in the supermarket. Because you don't want to do that. And then you also want to check your cans of pickles and stuff. And usually it says, Lalo Chashash Shemitah on it. And there's no concern of Shemitah. It'll say that under the Hechsher. So you look for it and you'll see. In Hebrew. Usually. On page 367, there's a little typo, just if you want to correct that. In the second paragraph, fourth line down, it says precept 69. That's really 89.
Good reading.
Wow. Just because I was going through. So, okay. Let's see. Next mitzvah. Not to gather the fruit of trees in the sabbatical year as it is generally gathered. So you can still pluck the apples, but not the same way. And I wonder what that means. On page 367.
Right, but...
There's the typo.
What's it supposed to be?
It's supposed to be 89. It's so right. Shelo ne'asof perot ha'ilan b'shvi'it k'derech she'osfim otan b'chol shana, in a regular way. I wonder what that means. Does that mean that cherry trees today, where we usually harvest them by a machine that grabs hold of the trunk and shakes it very hard around a spread out upside down umbrella looking thing and gathers them in? Is that what you can't do? But you could bring in migrant farm workers with bags over their shoulders, like the way they used to do it in Torah times. And that's permitted.
It says
you
can't cut figs with a fig knife, but you can cut them off with a regular knife.
So you can't do it
usual.
Or
you can't put your grapes in a bin and step on them, but you can knead them.
Right. So you can't do it the way you usually do it.
Well, we do so many things on Shabbos.
On Shabbos, you do things differently.
Right.
To keep in mind that it's different.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it seems that maybe you couldn't shake the tree, but you could harvest it like they did in biblical times, because that's not the way that we do it today. Because that's what it says, the way that you usually do it. Right? So, I mean, that would be for the POSIX to decide, but it's just interesting to see what that is. Let's look in the bottom paragraph of 369, really of Mitzvah 329. I just think it's interesting what Miriam said, that, you know, it's hard to be the teacher when you're still taking the course. But that's what he says here to his son, as he's saying, the root purpose of this precept is one is the same as the precept of the seventh year, which precedes it. And there I wrote you in this place where it is 84. It's another typo. It's 89. Hello. There you'll find, too, in which location it is in effect and in which time. And in the Mishnah tractate built around these topics. So he's giving, as he usually does, the extra sources. May you be worthy to learn and to teach it.
Which he doesn't usually.
He doesn't usually say that, right? That's what it says. And in the Hebrew, it's nice. Tizka vitilmad vitilamed. Right? You should merit, you should learn, and you should teach. Right? So that's an interesting thing, just to see that in there, to his son. Goodness, and I'm just going to have to end here, but I'll just say this one, and we'll start the next class with it, because it blends in. I wasn't sure if I should include it in this class or the next. But here's a vocabulary word for us. The precept of counting seven septenates. Septenates, is that how you pronounce that word?
Septenates,
cycles of 7 years. So it turns out that the French, I looked it up on Wikipedia, the French president serves for 7 years, and so it is. That's a word that we use in English to say his septenate. It's a seven-year cycle. That's what it means, and it's an English word.
So is it Is it quadrinate or something for us?
I don't know. No, we don't have
the seven things.
No, quad. She's saying
quad. Oh, quad.
Yeah, but septenate. So anyway, the precept
of A-N-N would like
is from the annual, right? Right. Septenate. Right.
It's a term, and everybody knows it's 4 years.
Right.
That's right.
Right. Anyway, so the precept of counting seven sets of 7 years up to the Yovel, that's what we're going to start with next time. That's what we're ending with now. 330 to count the year 7 by 7 till the Jubilee year in the land of Israel after we've taken possession of it. Right? So, Bezrat Hashem, we'll get back to that. We're not doing that yet.
So, we'll be gone.
Thank you very much.